This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Kenyan Wall Street Podcast. My name is Ali Mwakaneno, your usual host. So with me today is Lina Higiro, who is the CEO of NCBA Bank Rwanda PLC. And she's also one of the top 10 finalists of their Angaza Awards. And Lina and I want to have a conversation on her career journey, who are some of the people, rather, who are some of the women she finds inspiring, and what are some of the things that she has done that make her part of the top 10 finalists of the awards. Welcome to the show, Lina.
Thank you so much.
Tell us a little bit about your career journey.
Okay. I just want to let listeners know that I actually started working at the age of 18. And my first role ever, and the reason I say this is because it anchors why I got to be in certain roles and do well. My first role was actually as a librarian, so I did not start up in a very classy, fancy job. So I started at 18 in Canada in a very beautiful but remote place called New Brunswick, where I was going to a university called Mount Allison. And I worked from there in different roles in Ontario, in sales. I did a lot of sales. I did a lot of digital, actually, marketing. Then it was quite graphic and not as developed as it is today. And then I moved to South Africa, where I worked for a power company called Eskom. And I had to really learn how to deal with different stakeholders, government, private sector, and technicians. So that really, really helped me sink my teeth into stakeholder management. I moved to Rwanda in 2007, and that's when I started my banking career as the head of SME for what was then FINA Bank and what is now GT Bank. And my role there was to launch the SME division. And I'm glad to say that, you know, it was quite exciting. I launched the brand as an SME bank and developed a really healthy portfolio of about 11 million in liabilities and an asset book of about 8 million. And worked a lot on efficiencies, you know, in terms of loan approval, disbursement processes. But also the most exciting part was building a team of SME RMs and ROs and product development teams who were about 20 full-time staff across the country. Today, 50% of these staff are actually in senior management roles in the financial sector, which gives me really, it deepens my network in terms of the sector. I then went on to I&M Bank, where I was the head of corporate strategy and marketing, totally different from SME lending, which was my core strength in banking. But it led me into developing strategy and communications. And then I&M had just acquired BCR, so I was charged with the rebranding process for the business, which was totally new for me, but it actually was quite successful. I also tried to go into business, and the CEO then was very instrumental in just letting me do what I think would work. And I revamped the sales structure for branches and increased sales contributions from outlying branches up to 30%. The most exciting bit in I&M was when I reviewed the bank's pricing model, something not many in the team wanted to do, but it increased non-funded income then by 13% between 2013 and 2014. So that was quite exciting in I&M. And I spent about 4 years in I&M and then made an interesting transition to AB Bank, which was a microfinance. Totally, most people would wonder, how would you move from a corporate, you know, high-end bank to a microfinance? But I looked at it as an opportunity to learn the operating side of a bank. So I was hired as a chief operating officer then.
Right.
And I actually, for my lessons in I&M, I positioned the bank into the second fee-generating bank in the Access Group in Africa, about six banks. In my first year, non-funded income grew by 150%. So I'm quite proud of the team I worked with and the gains in that business. We also introduced new segments of customers and something called Group Savers, which was quite a surprise and new to the group as well, where we just started with, you know, 150 accounts, which were averaging very small amounts. But I'm told today when I talk to the teams that it's actually the product has worked extremely well. I revised the business development model. In the first 6 months, we had new deposits of almost 1 billion, and it was the fast in the group as well. So quite exciting times. It was difficult, but it was what I needed to actually be considered as the CEO for NCBA. So I then joined NCBA in 2018, July. And really, we talk about highlighting women's achievements and women on boards. There are two women on two regional bank boards who did not give me a break. They asked me why I was not applying for this role. It was not a role that was, there was no headhunting. This was open market competitive role. So without their push, I probably would not have applied for this role because I kept thinking that I will not qualify. But I did, and I joined the bank in 2018, July, and I'm still here today. It's going to be my third year anniversary in July.
You started working at quite a young age, and it's been quite a journey to where you are. Tell us about these women who inspired you, you know, to go for the role that you currently occupy in NCBA, and perhaps some other women that inspired you throughout your career.
What I've learned throughout my career is that you need to be open with a certain group of people who will push you, who will encourage you. And these two women who are on two regional bank boards actually are competitors. Then said, you know, there's this opportunity we hear in the market, and why aren't you considering it? You've done 2 years at the microfinance. It's time to try and do something else. And these women inspire me because I now do the same for every, you know, for people where I see that there's potential to move on. I try to do the same and encourage and support. We need a lot of support as women, as some of the Angaza founders have really mentioned. We really do need the push. And so, yes, they inspire me, and they still today push me. In fact, one of them pushed me to apply for Angaza. They're still pushing me. So I have what we call the inspiration cabinet. It's a word I got from a book called The CEO Next Door. So I have these women who do not give me a break, and I also don't give them a break. So actually, I got through Angaza because of one of them who, you know, pushed me to apply. But there's other interesting and inspiring women. For example, the other day, there's a lady I interviewed 2 years ago for an NCBA teller. I asked her if she was reading any books. And she said, she kind of gave me a very goofy answer and said, my children's books. And so I said to her, you know, every time so we did hire her because she's quite a good salesperson. But every time I met her, I said, are you reading a book? Are you reading a book? Eventually, she started reading books, real proper books, and she shared one of her books on my WhatsApp. And then I said to her, you know what, why don't you, let's start a book club in the bank. And she said, yes, but she never expected me to say, so why don't you lead it? And she took it up, and she has launched the first NCBA book club. And I think, I don't know any other bank that has a book club. So such women inspire me because she just grabbed it. She grabbed the opportunity. We now have a book club. She's leading it. This is somebody who admitted to me that she had never read anything other than her school books and her daughter's nursery book. Those women inspire me. There's another lady we just internally promoted to the head of digital. And she had never actually really been in management meetings. As you can imagine, it's scary. And she was thrown into her first board meeting 2 weeks after her appointment. And when she was asked to introduce herself to the board, she actually said, my name is Roslyn, and I'm ready for the challenge. I was blown away. Yeah. These women inspire me every day.
Now that you've brought the conversation of books, what's your favorite book? Or better yet, what book are you currently reading?
I read like 3-4 books concurrently. What I realized is that I'm a Malcolm Gladwell addict. I have finished 4 books. I'm going on to the 5th, which is Talking to Strangers. I am starting the book Talking to Strangers, but I'm currently reading Ngozi and Juliet's book on women and leadership. I was hesitant to pick it up, but it's so well written, so easily written. And, you know, it helps you be able to help, helps you give you words to your own story. So that's the current book I'm reading. A favorite, I think probably my favorite writer in the last year or so is definitely Malcolm Gladwell. And in his books, David and Goliath.
Of course, you've occupied various roles in Rwanda's banking sector. You know, before you arrived at NCBA, you are at INM, you are at AB Bank. What has been your experience as being a woman in the boardroom?
First, what I've learned is it really helps to have a supervisor or a line manager who is there to support you. The physical space of having this person there looking at you and saying, don't worry, you'll be fine. You really need that person. Secondly, is to prepare. There's an assumption that, you know, sometimes people don't go the extra mile and prepare. So I prepare thoroughly. We actually have pre-runs with the team before we have meetings. By the time we have a board meeting, there's no surprise, and it really helps to prepare thoroughly. And also, you know, when I'm working with my management team, what we actually say, what is our theme? Our theme is to go in together as a team. So I'm not going to come out fighting with you or the other one. So we resolve issues and decide on our one voice before we go for our meetings. So what I've learned is boards are evolving. You have to be very aware of the different characters in board meetings, in board committees, and you have to create your own relationship. As I've grown, I've understood that you have to have your own relationship with each director, because without that, it becomes very difficult to get buy-in for difficult decisions, to get support when you've made maybe not a very good decision, which needs you to clean up a bit. But you'd need to create your own relationship with every director, and the chair is an extremely important partner. No matter what you think they are or who they are, you really need to make an effort to meet consciously. I have a meeting with my board member, my chair, every month, just to catch up on what's going on in the business so that there are no surprises. So I'm very open book, and that's what I've learned. Be open book, prepare, and have a relationship with each of the directors.
Let's look at the actual representation of women, especially on leadership boards. I'm sure Rwanda is like Kenya, where we have a few women on boards, but we're still not there yet to achieve equal representation of women in top leadership. Perhaps what are some of the organizational policy changes you would like to see that would help more women like you to rise to top level management?
Okay, I think Angaza, for example, has made me have to research more on what would we do? What does an institution need to do? For example, starting fast with who you have, what the business you're driving. And it's really to be intentional about highlighting women's achievements publicly. And there's research that actually says that when you highlight a woman's achievements publicly, other capable women start to feel that they can also aspire. And because women do not self-promote, when you publicly announce that this woman has done very well, but you make it quantifiable and measurable, then you level the playing field in terms of a recognition gap, which men just do it themselves. They say, I'm doing well and this is what I'm doing. So that's definitely a conscious policy of recognition. This may sound very stereotypical, but we need very family-friendly policies at work, because when you do this, you're actually building a future, not just for the women, but also for the men. So family-friendly policies like flexi hours. A colleague of mine has started lactation centers in her business. I haven't, and I need to start very soon. I have so many young staff who are having babies, but they have nowhere to go to breastfeed or to preserve milk for the evening. So those are things, they sound simple, but here I am, a 3-year business, and it has taken me, you know, a wake-up call to say, hey, you don't even have a lactation center, a small room for women. So those family-friendly policies are very important. Then also being intentional about how career paths are mapped out and the types of interviews that take place. Culturally, many women, especially here in Rwanda, do not speak fast and do not speak loud. And in for certain roles, somebody may think this one can never do sales, but she connects with the market. So we need to revise these policies in reviewing how do we handle our interview process so that it's not all one gender or one perception that this is how a sales interview should go or the profile. So we're looking at that. Those are the kind of policies we're looking at. And on the soft side, this is something I have been reading about and seeing in practice. When you have meetings, encourage women to speak fast because many times it gets swallowed up by the men on the table. So when you start encouraging the women, indirectly you say, you know, if you're the head of finance, what do you have to say? If you're intentional with that, it just builds courage. And those are small things. There are soft policies and there are structural policies that we need to implement.
Lina, you've talked about recognizing achievements as perhaps one of the policy changes that you think would promote or rather would help women rise to top level management. What are some of the ways you think would be best to highlight the achievements of women?
First of all, just at every opportunity where a woman has moved forward, there's a milestone that's quantifiable. You just announce, oh, Jennifer has raised 20% deposits from last month and she's done it XYZ way. In those forums, what happens is the woman who's getting the acknowledgement feels more encouraged to move forward. Mm-hmm. And if you do it in a more public forum, what happens is that you then develop a pipeline of potential capable women saying, you know what, if she's doing it and she's being acknowledged, I can also do it. So there's, you know, different forms of acknowledging women's performances, whether it's internally in small meetings, in bigger forums, and also, you know, helping these women who are trying to move forward know that the next step for them and making it happen, actually keeping your word and making it happen.
Lina, you're featured as one of the top 10 applicants of the Angaza Awards, and the Angaza Awards had applicants spanning all over, you know, East Africa, from Kenya, Tanzania, Rwanda, Uganda. What was your primary motivation for applying for these awards?
Honestly, I was experimenting. Like, I had these ladies who were like, apply. And I thought, you know what? I have nothing to lose. Let me just apply. And it's there's always something I've learned, that there's always something you learn from jumping into a sea or jumping into an opportunity. So that was my motivation to see, let me see what happens.
All right. Well, moving forward. So the Angaza Awards, of course, was looking at different metrics before recognizing you as one of the top applicants. And this included both, you know, the numbers metrics when it comes to, you know, the impact that you've made in the banking sector, as well as your impact you've made outside your workplace, you know, outside the banking and finance sector. What are some of the contributions that you think you have made in the banking sector?
Okay, as NCBA Bank, you know, I joined in 2018 July when we had just acquired Crane Bank. And at that point, I was tasked with stabilizing the brand and the business. We were about 30 staff then. We're almost getting to 80 now. And when I joined, it was CBA, and we had a loan book of about 800 million Kenya shillings. Today, end of 2020, we have a loan book of 3.6 billion Kenya shillings. Our deposits also grew considerably from 1.9 billion to 4.6 billion Kenya shillings. And as such, our total assets grew by 132% from 2.8 billion to 6.5 billion. The best part of it, of course, our top line, our operating income, grew from 120 Kenya shillings to 422 million Kenya shillings. has been quite an exciting journey. Our digital business, born off, of course, from the success in Kenya with Mshwari and Fuliza and all the products that go along with digital. Our digital business contributes about 30% of our revenue. And in our market, it has made us in Rwanda the largest bank by customer numbers. We boast about 3 million customers. We're the largest bank by customer number. And, you know, we are doing something very new. We're still the only bank that offers mobile loans and savings through the partnership with MTN. And we've issued almost 38 billion in francs. That's francs, which if you divide by 9, you'll get the Kenya shillings. To date, we are still and we're innovating every day. We're offering mobile money agents 2-day facilities to resolve their float when they run out of float, and we're the first to do this. So it's been quite an exciting journey, especially also belonging to a group, NCBA Group, which has a total assets of about 528 billion Kenya shillings. So there's tremendous growth. We have grown our business from the experience of being our customer more than anything else. We started with nothing. We didn't have mobile banking, online banking, but we still grew our business to where it is today. So that's my story with NCBA, and we are looking at really deepening our footprint in the country. We're now primarily in Kigali, but we'll be moving out very soon across country.
NCBA Bank Rwanda has done quite impressively under your leadership. Away from the bank, what are some of the initiatives that you as Lina Higiro have either participated in or spearheaded that maybe benefit women?
Sure. Beyond banking, as you said, about 3 months ago, the CEO of the Development Bank of Rwanda and the head of HR for Equity, we got together to try and just to discuss and see what is it we can do. Actually, it started out as the three banks. What can we do as the three of us to support women to create, one, a pipeline for leadership, two, to create institutions that women love to work for and spend so much of their time with. And we came up with three pillars, three key areas, and this was mental health, career development, and sexual harassment. On mental health, you know, in Rwanda, actually, there's been a study by the University of Rwanda which showed that, you know, post the impact of COVID reflected that 52% of our general population suffer from major depression, alcoholism, panic disorders. And we see some of this reflected in our businesses. And so we took this up in conjunction with experts from what we call the SANA initiative. And with the support of the Rwanda's Bankers Association, we have launched what we call the Employee Assistance Program to support employees going through all kinds of anxiety, depression, financial-related pressures for all banks. We are definitely taking the lead as NCBA, Equity, and BRD. So that's one I'm quite proud of in this for this quarter. So that is now underway. We're now looking at career advancement. And career advancement is it's not something you can just, you know, pick up a pen and start writing a policy on career advancement, because there are a lot of structural and cultural issues that make advancement difficult. So we're going to start with just research in our individual institutions and then come together and try and understand what we can do within our own capacities. Otherwise, beyond that, I do have a fund I support for university students who run out of fees. I've been that student. And these students do not have to be, you know, grade A students. They can just be students who, it's just a misfortune. So I've created this fund and we have about 7 children now. They're not children, but they're university students who I connect with and support. And I'm hoping this fund will grow. So that's what I do aside from pure banking.
Lina, you've been recognized in other previous forums. So for example, you were a speaker in Career Women's Network in 2019, where you were speaking on sharing successful women's stories. And you've also mm-hmm. been a participant in the CEO Summit 2018 in Rwanda for the unconventional CEO. So definitely being recognized rather is not something that's new to you. How would you use being the recipient of the Sangaza Awards to influence others?
Yeah, first of all, I have to commend the Angaza team for including regional entrants for the opportunity. I'm not sure if it was initially just for Kenya, but what this has done, first of all, is that it has highlighted that as a Rwandan, you can be acknowledged as a performer. And it has also given us quite a bit of, there's a lot of national pride in that, that, you know, regional banks are being run by Rwandans and they're successful. What would I do? It's quite a challenge. I have to say I have been challenged. You know, for profound change to take place in terms of women in the financial sector includes insurance and others, there has to be a lot of study, a lot of discussion, and a lot of campaigning. And this has forced me to now think I need to now be proactive internally and externally with the women I talk to from other banks on how we can get this going. So that's what this has done. You know, this Angaza has challenged me to become more intentional and look into the challenges facing women like me and my sisters and my cousins and my friends in how they can move from entry level to supervisory roles.
As we approach the end of the interview, of course, being a successful applicant of the Angaza Awards, what would you have done differently if given another chance? And what advice would you have for prospective applicants?
Okay, in terms of what I would have done differently, I'd probably have encouraged my fellow bankers harder and not just taken it as an experiment. I encouraged one of the other ladies and she's like, but the application form looks like writing a PhD. And I told her, no, it's very simple. So I probably would have held her hand and gone with it. So that's one I would do. But what would I have done differently is also to prepare for media. I think because I took it as an experiment, I did not really expect that the attention would come in the way it has come. And I'm very glad for it because it warms my heart that there's an appreciation for the efforts I have made throughout my career. And it's very public for the first time in my life. But it is, I would have prepared better for media, but I'm glad for people who are kind like you who have prepared me and have been very kind on the sessions like this. So yes, it's just to prepare better and to really pull my colleagues' arms and make them sit down and do a little bit of work.
Lina, thank you so much for sharing the feedback you had on the application process. Any last words for women out there?
Yes, definitely. We are in an era of do-it-yourself career development. Most institutions do not have the energy and time to set up training for you, for guidance. And the sober truth is competence and expertise does not automatically generate recognition and advancement. So there's some things I'd like to suggest, which there's a book I would recommend called 14 Profile Raising Ideas for Emerging Female Leaders by Susan Ritchie. And she says these things, which I've seen work. Speak up for yourself. Cultivate a sponsor or a supporter who will advocate for your ideas at work. Secondly, be vigilant for new opportunities. I always looked out for my new opportunity 2 years before I actually got the opportunity because you have to prepare yourself and develop the skills you need for the next opportunity. And finally, give people a good reason to remember you. Listen and learn to listen intently. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I think that's really, really powerful advice. Thank you so much for sharing your pointers. To our listeners, that was Ms. Lina Higiro, the Chief Executive Officer of NCBA Bank Rwanda. Thank you so much for joining today's podcast.